Chapter 2. All four of us froze. Valerie instantly phased out of view. The floorboards inside the room creaked loudly, and a woman wearing a white nightgown trundled out of the doorway. The petite constable stretched her arms, yawned loudly, blinked twice, squinted down the dark hallway, and then paused.
"What do we do?"
"Stay absolutely still. She looks half asleep." The petite, blonde constable hobbled down the hallway in the opposite direction, tried one of the doors, opened it, and then peered into the darkness beyond. Her voice was muffled from behind the open door, so we couldn't make out what she was saying, but I assumed she was checking in on someone.
Must be in the bathroom or something,"
the constable mumbled, closed the door with a thump, and then padded back our way. I held my breath and focused my mind for what our next steps would be if she spotted us. She'd have to die, or we'd at least have to knock her out and take her back to my laboratory. There was no question about it. We couldn't let anyone see us, or we'd have to kill them.
"Martha, is that you?"
The small constable leaned forward, squeezed her eyes into slits, and then suddenly leaned back, clicked her tongue, and turned down the hall. This was it. She was about to spot us, and I tensed all of my muscles to leap forward and smash her over the head with my fists. Just as suddenly, the petite constable sighed under her breath, shrugged, and then turned toward her open door.
"No, Martha must still be on patrol. Probably just some shadows from the trees outside. I really need to start wearing my glasses. I can't see a damn thing. And I need to stop talking to myself. The other girls are going to think I'm crazy or something."
The nightgown-wearing woman scratched at her scalp, smacked her lips together, rested a hand on the door handle, and then shuffled back into her room. My heart hammered in my chest, sweat beaded on my forehead, and we all stood stock still as we listened to the constable climb back into bed and roll over. The seconds ticked by as we waited, glanced at each other out of the corners of our eyes, and finally heard the sounds of breathy snoring coming from the tiny constable's room. I breathed a heavy sigh, wiped the sweat from my brow with my sleeve, and then turned toward my women. "Oh, thank science," I grunted.
"I thought we were going to be caught for sure. I can't believe she didn't see us."
"Well, she did say she needed her glasses. We should be thankful she wasn't wearing them when she came out."
"But if she had caught us, we might have gotten another monster girl. I couldn't help but be a little excited."
"No, no more monster girls for a little while. We just got Ryan. We can't make any more until someone else threatens us. Now we have a task at hand. Let's get finished and then get the hell out of here."
"Yes, this place gives me the creeps. It's like we're in a den of constables, and at any second, all of them could burst out of their rooms and attack us."
"Hortensia's room is all the way at the end. Let's keep going." All of my women nodded in agreement, turned back toward the single door at the end of the hall, and tiptoed toward it with light feet. Once we were in front of it, I tried the handle with Hortensia's key in hand, but thankfully it was unlocked. I turned the knob, swung open the door, and then peered into the gloom beyond. The chief constable's room was huge, bigger than I assumed all of the other constables' rooms were.
"She has to have some oil lamps around here somewhere. I'll find them. I can see the best in the dark since I lived underground for so long."
"Here!"
Valerie smiled, rushed in, and grabbed stray clothes from the floor.
"Charles, close the door. We'll stuff these underneath the crack just in case anyone wakes up. That way, they won't see the light under the door."
"That's a brilliant idea. Everyone in? I'm closing the door, and then we'll stuff the clothes under the crack."
"I found her oil lamps. She has three of them, one by her bed and two of them on her desk."
I slid the door closed, took the clothing from Valerie's hands, and pushed the fabric into the crack underneath the door. Right as I finished, light bloomed across the room. Ryan hurried to the other lamps and hastily lit them with a burning match. Hortensia's room in the light was even bigger than I'd thought before, and I gazed around it for a second. The chief constable's quarters were comprised of three rooms and a small kitchenette by the large bay windows at the front of the building. She had a spacious office with an enormous roll-top desk, a cushy emerald green couch, and a dead fireplace. The next room was her bedroom, and it reminded me of the one I'd seen at Delphine's, except without all of the pastel pinks and frilly adornments. Most of Hortensia's furniture was a deep scarlet color, black, chocolatey brown, or emerald green. The reds in each of the rooms reminded me of the chief constable's fiery hair, and I almost wished that Ryan had inherited her hair color.
You said we should hang her. This beam would do perfectly. We can position her desk chair directly underneath her to make it more believable.
Let's do that. I nodded, picked up one of the oil lamps, and headed for her desk. And we'll place the letter at her feet, so when they come into the room, it's one of the first things they find. Ryan lowered Hortensia's body, rested it against the floor, and then grabbed the coil of rope from her hip. The dark-haired woman tilted her head, unspooled the rope, and then tossed it up over the thick beam. Once she'd tied it off, she got to work forming a noose at the other end, and I watched her deft hands for a moment. I turned, lifted the lamp over my head, and then hissed through my teeth. Once I shined the light into the darkened wall over the roll-top desk, all of Hortensia's evidence came into view, pinned onto the smooth wall. The bottom layer was a drawn-out map of Edenheart with red circles around points around the city. Pictures of different people were pinned to different spots, and red thread had been wound around a single one in particular, and the threads branched out from there. The single hand-drawn picture was my own. My face looked years younger, taken from my identification card right before I aged out of the brute school, and I stared at it for a few seconds. There was a picture next to mine, also hand-drawn, and it was Daisy's face. Both of our portraits were positioned above the location of our manor, and I followed the red lines of thread to all of the other pictures. The largest one was, of course, Edenie's regal portrait positioned over the duchy, and I plucked the string with disdain. The next line of thread led to the location of Milton and Delphine's deaths. Their pictures were pinned to the wall, too, but I barely glanced at them as I followed the last red thread.
Josephine,
Daisy murmured from over my shoulder. The blonde's stunning portrait grinned down at us from the wall with red letters scrawled across the parchment. Harlot, I read. I wonder if she has anything else in her desk. We have to take all of this down. No one can see it. We have to protect Josephine along with our family. My hands moved before I could stop myself, and I ripped all of it down. I didn't even care that the chief constable had suspected us. I was angry because she dragged Josephine into all of this. The blonde aristocrat hadn't done anything to anyone. She was struggling to survive and provide for her sick mother. If any of this got out, it would be the end of Josephine's life. Everything would be stripped from her, and I couldn't allow that to happen.
You really feel for Miss Josephine, don't you, Charles? She must be such an amazing woman for you to want to protect her this much.
Charles likes Josephine.
Maybe I do, but it's more than that. Josephine hasn't done anything wrong. She's nothing but kind to those around her, and if someone found this, her life would be utterly destroyed. She doesn't bother anyone or break her men down like all of the other aristocrats. She treats them kindly and with respect, as if they were her equals, and I respect that about her. If someone were to find all of this, they'd dig deeper into it, and the bright light I see within Josephine would be snuffed out. I crumbled all of the papers, string, and tacks together, stuffed them into the pack around my waist, and then glanced down the floor at my feet. The only paper remaining had fluttered to the ground, its edges torn and crumbled from my rage. I bent down, took it gently in my hands, and then smoothed out the harsh wrinkles against the blonde's face.
You should keep it. Maybe, if we ever tell her about us, you can explain how you protected her. I think that Miss Josephine would like that.
I think I will. Though I doubt we'll ever tell her about us. She'd surely think all of us were insane and run for the hills, but I'll keep it, just in case. I folded the portrait, placed it within my pocket, and then ripped open the roll-top desk. Papers were scattered across its surface, and they shifted lightly from the air rushing inside. Names, places, and small notes were scribbled across their surfaces. I barely glanced at them and stuffed them all into my pack. We'd burn all of the evidence once we returned home, and I didn't care what we took as long as all of it was gone. Once I cleared the desk, I turned, glanced toward Valerie and Daisy, Both of them were carefully searching through Hortensia's belongings, and every once in a while they'd place a piece of paper or note into the pack on the floor. Ryan had unrolled Hortensia's body from the tarp, affixed the noose around her neck, and slowly raised her from the floor into the air. It was a grotesque scene, but the purplish and blue color of the chief constable's face made the hanging look more believable. The imp woman didn't seem bothered by the body at all. I knew she'd never done something like this before, but she acted so nonchalantly, even as Hortensia's limp feet bumped into her shins.
What's the matter, Charles?
It's nothing. I feel as if we should say something about Hortensia, as if this is some type of funeral proceeding, but there was nothing good about that woman to begin with. She was horrible from the moment she stepped into Edenheart, and she left this world as all of the women who step into my machine do. At first, they beg for their lives, plead with me, bargain with me, promise never to breathe a word about what I've done and what they've seen. But as soon as I refuse, their true colors come out. They hurl insults and threaten me with bodily harm and activate their powers. The first prisoner I used almost blasted out the compartment window with her fire. And when that didn't work, she bashed the glass with her forehead. Delphine was exactly the same, though she barely begged for her life like the others. It's almost as if their hatred of men is in their blood, and I want to know what changed. At what point in history did women decide that men were the enemy? There has to be something in history, some type of turning point when the women rose up against their equals.
I thought it was simply because women developed powers, and they turned against men.
But there has to be a reason. It can't just be just because. There has to be a reason behind it all.
I bet the Queen knows. Ryan said that the Queen is the oldest woman in history. She has to know what happened. Maybe she was the person who instigated it. If you think about it, really think about it, how did she come into power? How has she ruled for this long? You'd think that at some point she would have stepped down and let someone else have a turn.
In the history books, they speak of a lone woman who rose against the brute masses, but they've never named her. It could possibly be the Queen.
We don't know Edeny's reasons behind wanting to take down the Queen, and I'm not trying to defend her or anything, but maybe that's the exact reason that Edeny wants to take her down. I mean, I certainly don't want a country that's run by the Duchess, but the Queen has been ruling over us for hundreds of years. Perhaps it's time for her rule to end.
Look what I found. It was hidden under the bed.
Oh, is that a diary? Oh, gimme!
The brunette chuckled, crossed the room, bent down beside the ash blonde, and opened up the small leather-bound book. The two women scanned over the pages together, and then suddenly the bear girl's honey eyes widened.
We need to take this with us,
Daisy whispered.
Why? I mean, if it has information on Josephine and us, we have to take it, but why?
It has all of Edeny's plans in it! Like, all of them! There's so much more to it than what Hortensia told us! I mean, it doesn't explicitly say what she wants from the Queen, but here it says that they hired the new scientist to create the super soldiers for Edeny. Hortensia didn't believe that it could be done, but apparently the Duchess was very optimistic. Here, I'll read this one. This morning, the Duchess summoned me to the Duchy. I complied, of course, since I am the person put in charge of the whole town, and I only answer to her. I arrived, and she immediately pulled me into the basement where her trophy room is located. The Duchess had set up a hasty-looking laboratory. She said that she modeled it after Charles Rayburn's. The Duchess then introduced me to her hired scientist, a man named Lucian, who I don't like very much. He is pompous, confident, and condescending for a brute. I hope at some point I can get some time alone with him and beat some respect into him. Edeny spoke at length about Charles Rayburn the entire time. I've yet to tell her what I suspect him of, but in the future, if his actions become more questionable, I will have to bring it to her attention. Though I'm conducting my own investigation of Charles, it seems as if the Duchess is quite obsessed with him, and I can't tell if it is good or bad. I will have to question her more about it while not giving myself away.
Does that have a date on it? I asked.
Oh, a few days ago. That's the very last entry. It must have been right before we saw her at the way station.
It has to be. That almost feels as if it was hundreds of years ago, but it was only a day or two.
Do you think she shared her suspicions with anyone else? It'd be awful if we did all of this work, and we find out later she told the Duchess or one of the other constables.
I highly doubt that, I contended. The aristocrats are so secretive, they barely speak to each other unless it's meaningless gossip. We learned that when we first ran into Adelia, Liliana, and Josephine.
Not only that, but we all know how the Duchess is. Edeny would never tell anyone her plans. Even from reading these diary entries, the Duchess barely told Hortensia anything. Just the bare minimum that she could get by with. Hortensia may have been the chief constable, but it seemed that she didn't have a lot of power. You'd think that someone in authority such as her would rule this town with an iron fist.
You'd assume that, I confirmed. But in towns like Edenheart, the rulers are the ones that control everything. The constables and law enforcement are nothing more than extensions of those in power.
And then those like the Duchess are nothing more than extensions of the Queen herself. They all are small segments of the long arm of the matriarch, the Queen.
I may have some of Hortensia's memories, but I don't understand the laws of this land at all. My mother and father ruled together as a unit. He didn't have more power than her, and the same with my mother. I wish that this world was the same as the Impdom. It'd be so much simpler.
I wish it were like that, too. Maybe it will be someday, but we can only hope. Daisy, do you have the letters? I've cleared out the desk. Have you two found everything?
I searched in the cushions of all the couches, in her dressers, all over the place. Everything I found is in the pack and ready to be taken home and burned.
The same with me, Charles.
Daisy hummed, rose from the floor, reached into her pockets, grabbed the letters, and then offered them.
What about you, Ryan? Hortensia is strung up and ready to be found. It's a little strange to see her like this, though. I once was her. I feel no emotion when I look at her. But I know that part of her is within me. Well, I won't dwell on it anymore, Daisy. Do you have the threatening letter with you?
Here it is. Put it at her feet so it looks like she had it in her hands and then dropped it.
That's a good idea.
Ryan nodded, bent down, dropped the letter, glanced up at the corpse, and then shifted the letter a little to the left.
Perfect. I'll place the chair a little farther back, but still close enough where she could have stepped off.
I stepped closer to the roll-top desk, placed the letters from other harlots on the cherry-colored wood, arranged them into a disheveled pile, and then closed the lid with a soft clunk. All of my women turned at the same time, smiled at me, and sighed softly. Oh, we're finished. Finally. Let's grab the pack and get out of here. We stood together in the middle of the room. My eyes shifted, and I examined each surface for anything we could have left. Nothing seemed out of place. Hortensia's room had been a bit messy when we came in, and even after we rummaged through her things, it looked as no one else had been there.
How long do you think it'll take for them to know that she's missing?
Not long. It's already been a day, and I know how demanding Edeny can be when she has a project. When I worked for her, she'd show up randomly whenever she wanted, but that was mostly to throw me off or intimidate me. I doubt she'd do those things to the chief constable. Maybe pressure her to show up and things like that, but she'd never stoop so low as to threaten another woman.
And yet she has the gall to threaten me.
Daisy sniffed, giggled, and then smiled sheepishly.
I mean, I know we're lying about who I am, but you'd think she'd know better than to threaten another woman in power. For all she knows, the Browning family could be richer and more influential than she is.
Sometimes I wonder about the aristocrats' families.
What do you mean? I asked.
Well, from what you've told us, males are handed off to the schoolmarms the moment they're born. But what about the females? I know that they're allowed to remain with their birth givers, but are they given any affection at all? Do their mothers love them and care for them, or are they treated as coldly and sterilely as they treat each other? Daisy, can you remember anything from Delphine's childhood? How did her mother treat her? Was it lovingly? I only started thinking about this because of Josephine. You rarely hear aristocrats talking about their mothers, but Josephine does. She cares very much about her and takes excellent care of her.
Delphine's childhood? Well, I don't have a lot of memories from her past, mostly the most recent events, and a bit of her adolescence, but there is something. Her mother would fly into fits of rage, throwing ice daggers at random servants. They'd scuttle out of the way, and she'd roar with laughter at their frightened faces. She would often encourage Delphine to do the same, and they'd often make a game out of it. Delphine's mothers did a lot to her consorts, and if my memory serves me well, she killed at least two or three with her ice daggers. When she'd get furious, she'd do it to Delphine, too. The aristocrat had a healed scar on her left thigh where one grazed her, and she'd often apply salves to it in hopes that it would fade.
Oh, sounds horrible. I may not like the aristocrats, but can you imagine growing up in a house where your mother, the one person who's supposed to love and protect you, throws ice daggers at you when she's upset? Delphine may have been a terrible person, and she deserved to die, but it makes you wonder. If she'd been treated differently while growing up, would she have been so horrible? Would she have believed so wholeheartedly that men are innately evil?
I believe it's the way our society is. But you have to factor in how Josephine was raised, too. It makes me wonder, is Josephine's mother a brute sympathizer, too? Did her mother ingrain those beliefs into her as she grew up?
We should ask her. We won't know unless we ask.
I could try. We already spoke about what she said when she was drunk. I told her that I feel the same, but she shouldn't be as loose-lipped as she is, especially if she drinks around other aristocrats.
Well, Josephine did say that she doesn't associate with them very often. She even told us that she was only there that day because Adelia and Liliana saw her passing by and invited her to lunch.
That's very true, I nodded. The next time I see her, I'll bring it up. But if she seems uncomfortable, I'll stop immediately.
Oh, you're such a gentleman, Charles.
Everyone finished? We've been here long enough. I think we should go before anyone notices we're here.
I'm ready.
Me too.
Me three.
The red-skinned imp smiled. I went around the room, blew out all of the oil lamps, kicked the clothing tucked into the door out of the way, and then reached for the door handle. Right as my hand contacted the metal, the knob turned, and the door exploded open with the bark of a familiar voice.
Search every nook and cranny of this goddamn room!
Edeny boomed.
I want this room ripped apart by the time you're finished. Hortensia won't get away from me this easily!